This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to the Zoomer Week in Review, brought to you by CARP, fighting for financial security for our seniors. Find out more at carp.ca.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Zoomer Week in Review, all things Zoomer worldwide. I'm Libby Znaimer. Taking on negligent nursing homes, crusading lawyer Melissa Miller is the focus of a new documentary. And it's commonly described as a ringing in the ears, and it affects nearly 40% of adults. We'll talk tinnitus with an expert. But first, here are your Zoomer headlines from around the world. Scotland now has one of the world's strictest hate speech laws, and since it came into effect this week, Scottish police received 4,000 complaints, or 60 an hour. The majority are related to a 2020 viral video where Scotland's leader went on an anti-white rant. The law carries prison sentences of up to 7 years. Critics, including J.K. Rowling and Elon Musk, say it will damage free speech. A simple blood test for the early diagnosis of Alzheimer's is now available in Israel. The president of the Israel Neurological Association says a biomarker-based diagnosis at an early stage is the beginning of a revolution in the field. The liquid biopsy, which diagnoses the disease without an invasive procedure, costs $400 and must be ordered and overseen by a physician. Alberta nurses are warning that new provincial rules that came into effect this week will remove any legal requirement for long-term care operators to provide nursing care to residents. They referenced the case of a stroke patient sent to recover a loan at a motel. Previous legislation required operators to provide at least 1.9 hours of nursing care per day, but the new act makes no mention of a required minimum. The world's oldest man has died at the age of 114, just under 2 months before his 115th birthday. Juan Vicente Perez Mora from Venezuela held the Guinness World Record since February 2022. He attributed his longevity to working hard, resting on holidays, going to bed early, and drinking a glass of aguardiente, a strong liquor, every day. Now the oldest living person in the world, a woman, is the 11th oldest person in history. Maria Brañas is 117 years old, born in 1907. Born in California and later moved to Europe, she's the oldest validated person ever to live in Spain. The supercentenarian still lives in a care home where she's resided since she was 93. I'm Libby Znaimer, and those are your Zoomer headlines from around the world.
We knew how complicated it was to take care of him. They should have been able to provide the basics, at the very least the basics, and that it was safe for him. And then you wouldn't have had to worry.
That's one of the clients of elder rights lawyer and advocate Melissa Miller, the subject of a new documentary titled Stolen Time. It follows her legal battle against some of the world's most powerful long-term care corporations. I talked with her about the film which chronicles her toughest case yet, a mass tort representing hundreds of families.
I've been trying to focus my area of practice on nursing home negligence cases since, I would say, 2017, maybe a bit before that. And there was a press conference out there in, you know, the media universe from 2018 of me with my co-counsel launching what we called mass torts against three of the biggest for-profit chains, which is basically just a group of individual cases against those three companies. And The director of this documentary, Helene Klodowski, she had come across this because she had decided that she wanted to do a documentary about the state of long-term care in Canada as her next film. And she happened to just cold call me at the beginning of the pandemic. It just was sort of happenstance coincidence. And then, well, you know, we saw what happened to long-term care in the pandemic. So things just kind of snowballed from there.
We see a lot of your clients there, and we see some of their elders. So was that just a matter of getting permission? Because often that's the sticky, tricky part.
My clients agreed. We didn't use full names in the film on purpose, and I wanted to protect privacy and confidentiality. But I would say all of my clients are advocates. I think they're all advocates. I think that's fair to say. You know, they've all in some way, shape, or form been willing to tell their story about how their loved one was treated in long-term care because they all want the same thing: better. They want change for the better so that this doesn't keep happening to other elders in these nursing homes.
We've talked before about some of your cases, and you were just saying that you decided to focus your practice back in 2017. So tell me, if there is such a thing, what did you find most shocking during the pandemic?
Oh, you know, it's got to be the loneliness and the depression that sit in. This makes me emotional. The families became the unpaid care sector in our broken system of long-term care. And when they were shut out during the pandemic, that was gone. And the care just buckled at the seams. The residents were so, so, so lonely and isolated. And, you know, I think that depression runs rampant among the residents in long-term care homes anyways. And I think it got really, really, really bad. And to me, that was the saddest thing.
What about the physical neglect?
It's the simple things that snowball into the big things. So a few unchanged diapers that lead to serious infection, a glass of water being placed a little too far away and water content not being monitored or intake being monitored leads to severe dehydration that leads to death. You know, not moving someone who is bedbound and can't move on their own on a regular schedule can lead to fist-sized wounds that tunnel down to the bone. This is what we saw during the pandemic. This is what we saw made worse that was already happening. The clients of mine that you see in the film are all pre-pandemic clients. And we just saw all of that getting much worse.
In the film, you talk about how a lot of lawyers don't want to be involved with these types of cases because the awards aren't very big, because it's considered that the clients, the older people, aren't going to live that long anyway.
Yeah, it's honestly one of the biggest challenges. Look, litigation costs money, and the only thing that you can get out of litigation, unfortunately, is money. I cannot make these homes act better in a lawsuit. I've noticed things starting to shift because of the number of claims that I'm bringing forward due to how brave the families are bringing them forward. And that's what sparked the other advocacy work that I do. You know, the protests, the demonstrations, testifying before the House of Commons, meeting with politicians. And that's what I urge my clients and anybody really to do, because you need to have bookended accountability. You can't, not every case, unfortunately, is suitable for a lawsuit, even if you can prove that the nursing home fell below the standard of care. Or for that matter, if there's damage, but you can't prove that the nursing home did something wrong because of evidentiary issues. So, you know, not every case is suitable for those reasons. And that's why I've done both. But what I've tried to do in my cases is reframe how we deal with some of these issues and push the envelope on what these cases can be worth so that more lawyers are willing to take them on.
Has that changed at all, or still the awards are low?
They're still low, but what has changed is the risk of going to trial. Any lawyer in litigation measures risk by what the outcome likely is going to be at trial. And, you know, what's a jury going to do with these cases? That's the calculus that goes on in any lawyer's head. And if a jury is, if the risk is increased because our jury pool is now more educated, because people are learning what's really going on in these homes and they're angry about it, that's an increased risk to these homes. And they know it. You know, that's doing your job as a lawyer representing the families in these cases, is increasing that risk so that we can get better results for our clients.
The government, and it recently unveiled a provincial budget, do you agree that they're doing a decent job of raising pay and recruiting more healthcare workers for long-term care? What do you think has to be done to make that happen?
I don't think they've increased pay enough. I mean, we saw a freeze in the nurses' pay in the middle of the pandemic. Nothing has been, the measures taken that the staff were dealing with were so bad that we need drastic changes to bring them up to the standards of today. The minuscule changes that we've seen are Band-Aids on a bullet hole, as far as I'm concerned, and any of the advocates in this sphere are concerned, quite frankly. So we need to see much more sweeping changes, and that's not going to happen until people demand it. And obviously removing profit from care is the big one. That's the big one. But the thing is, it's just too damn profitable for the people who are making money in this area.
What do you hope that this documentary will accomplish?
I hope that the fire that has already been lit during COVID to get people demanding better continues to be lit and burns brighter.
Melissa Miller, thanks so much.
Thank you, Libby.
Bye-bye. That was lawyer Melissa Miller. I'm Libby Znaimer, and this is the Zoomer Week in Review. Coming up, how to deal with that ringing in your ears.
You're listening to the Zoomer Week in Review, brought to you by CARP, bringing you vital information to boost your health, your finances, and your rights. Find out more at carp.ca.
Ringing, buzzing, clicking, and hissing. Those are the kind of sounds you may hear if you're afflicted with tinnitus. The symptoms range from mild to debilitating, and more than 9 million Canadians are affected. I talked with Dr. Yvonne Chan, otolaryngologist in chief at St. Michael's Hospital and Unity Health. If it's related to hearing loss, is it a problem that a lot of people don't deal with their hearing loss?
Well, no. I think that, unfortunately, people don't just realize that they're having hearing loss, but they may notice the tinnitus first, right? So that comes on first, and they're really bothered by it, and then they come and test. And I show them, hey, you have a little bit of hearing loss that's most likely related to aging. And then they realize, oh, this is why I have the tinnitus.
And so is the answer to tinnitus simple? Get hearing aids?
Partially, I would say. There's no cure to tinnitus at this time. There are lots of ongoing research going on, but we still don't have a cure. But hearing aids certainly help you. A lot of hearing aids have programs that they can actually amplify the sounds around you and avoid you hearing the noise in your ear that is being produced. And so that helps.
We think of it as a ringing in the ear, but it's not always that, right?
No, it can be any sound. It can be just a tone. It can be a beep. It could be music. It could be a whishing noise. It could be a pulse. So there's a number of different things that different people hear.
And do you know why somebody would hear a tone versus hash or whatever?
Yeah, no, unfortunately, there is no real way to know. But in some cases where it sounds like your own pulse, there may be some blood vessel issues in the brain near the ear that's why you're hearing it. And so there is actually new research going on that into pulsatile tinnitus, what we call it's pulse synchronous, and you can hear your own pulse. And that might be, related to some blood vessels issues. And so there are new treatments out there that we can intervene.
I've heard of treatments like a certain kind of meditation.
Well, meditation certainly helps you relax in general. And things that make the tinnitus worse are stress, not sleeping enough and too much caffeine. And so if you can, I know. So if you can actually, you know, certainly do meditation, that helps you relax, that will help you manage the tinnitus, and the noise level may be lower.
Is it recognized as a big problem? I mean, I know people who've had it terribly, and it's really hurt their quality of life.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a devastating problem in some people. And I think that there's a range of people who have tinnitus. Some of them are able to just sort of live with it, and they've learned how to live with it. And there are some of the people who are really having trouble, and they struggle a lot.
We've talked about meditation, but there's also certain kinds of cognitive therapy.
Yes. So cognitive behavioral therapy actually teaches you how to live with the tinnitus and how to manage the stresses and the emotions that goes with it. But that takes time and energy. And so if you can and able to invest, that would be actually something that has been shown to help.
Anything else?
Tinnitus retraining therapy is also something similar to cognitive behavioral therapy, but uses a lot of music therapy. So the other things that can help is also distracting things like white noise machines or like soothing noises and music in the background, TV being on and set a timer when you're falling asleep. Those are all things that can help you in the day-to-day.
You say white noise can be helpful. I have a little tinnitus, and that's what it is. It's just a little white noise.
Mm-hmm. So white noise will just distract you. And in your case, it might cancel it out. You never know. You could try.
Why does it occur more at night?
Oh, just because it's more quiet everywhere else. So there's no ambient noise that is distracting you during during the day. There's tons of noises around you that we don't actually hear.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about tinnitus?
Well, I think that, the one thing that we need to be aware of is if you're having one-sided tinnitus associated with one-sided hearing loss or, spinning vertigo, you may want to get it checked out just because those things can be red flags that there's something wrong with the nerves of hearing and the organs. So that's important to see your healthcare professional for.
Thank you so much, Dr. Yvonne Chan.
Thank you so much, Libby.
That was Dr. Yvonne Chan, otolaryngologist in chief at St. Michael's Hospital. And that brings us to the end of this week's edition of the Zoomer Week in Review. I'm Libby Znaimer. Thanks for joining me today. Be sure to come back next week to stay up to date with all things Zoomer worldwide.
Zoomer Week in Review is produced by Zeev Hadi, Christine Ross, and Paul Thomas. With technical production by Ian Robertson. Executive producer, Moses Neimer. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.